broadcasting from Hollywood, California. It's Grant's Rants, Hollywood Talk.
Drew Barrymore ends her marriage. Real Housewives of New Jersey wraps filming and it's a total mess. Erica Jane gives zero Fs. Is OJ innocent after all? And we're talking a must-read book with author Fern Ronay now. Let the ranting begin. You know what I'm about to say. I'm sitting across from lawyer turned author Fern Ronay.
Hi. I'm so excited to be here.
Fern, this has been such a long time coming.
I know.
Fern was on the short list when I first conceptualized this show of who had to be on it. Now, of course, you know, a lot of stuff has happened over the course of this show. Fern has made an appearance on our holiday episode, but I was really waiting for Fern to come on to talk about her book.
I kept saying, I'll come on when my book's going to be released. I'll come on when my book's going to be released. Finally!
Yeah, so name of the book and the date. Tell us.
Better in the Morning, Tuesday, April 26th. Big release date.
Tell us a little bit about the book from the start, before we even get into the topics, because this... Pay attention, please.
It is the story of a single 29-year-old Manhattan lawyer named Veronica Pacino, who is guided in her dreams by her dead Italian grandparents, Salvatore and Antoinette. And she goes through a bunch of trials and tribulations, and she is convinced she knows what will make her happy, and they guide her towards the things that will actually make her happy.
Nice, nice.
Yes.
So kind of in the vein of the spirituality that I've been kind of practicing a little bit. Yes. Now, of course, I've known Fern, and we've known each other through AfterBuzz for a while now, before you even, had a publisher. Mm-hmm. So I know this has been quite a long journey for you, longer than how long we've known each other. Mm-hmm. So I've kind of seen her come through this celebration of receiving this gift, and then the editing process, and just the timeline that it's taken. So how long does something like this take? Ugh,
so I took a writing class when I was still living in New York in 2008.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's been an 8-year odyssey. I didn't think it was really that long, but now that I think about it. And then I finally finished it in 2012, started looking for agents in 2013, got rejected by, like, pretty much every agent in North America, and then started looking for small independent publishers in the end of 2014. So we moved to LA in August of 2014, and I got my publisher in December of 2014. And then the editing process began. Well, it didn't begin then.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Final touches for a very long time. So I feel like I've kind of like been seeing the evolution of this since the agent and all this. So it's like, it's high time to celebrate and promote this book. So we'll get into more of that as we get deeper into the episode. Of course, you can bet on that. But first of all, let's talk about some hot topics. Now, you want to talk about Drew Barrymore and her divorce, which seemed to be kind of put out there in a very almost kind of a classy way. I think she's handled it quite well.
Yeah, I love her. We're the same age, so I grew up seeing her as Gertie in E.T., and I just always, you know, I felt for her when she was going through everything she went through. She just really had such a turbulent childhood, turbulent 20s, and it was so nice to see her grow into this seemingly stable, wonderful person. Mm-hmm. She just seems so nice. I just love that how she's made it through and how well she's done. So I was so happy when she found this nice Jewish guy and they had two kids and she loved his family. She finally had a family, like a stable family.
Right, right.
Oh, I was so happy for her. So when I saw this headline, I was devastated. I'm like, why am I so upset? I just feel terrible.
Earlier in this week, I was in touch with someone from Drew's camp. And I was curious if he had known this information at the time because he didn't touch upon any of it. So I'm like, who knows?
I wonder if he knew.
Probably, I guess. So she said a couple different things, but very appropriately and just very classy, I think she went about it. She said, sadly, our family is separating legally, although we do not feel this takes away from us being a family.
Yeah.
I think that's like the best thing you can say under the circumstances. Mm-hmm.
It's really mature.
Yeah. So I'm happy for her if that makes her happy, but it can't be easy. And I'm sure the two of them had probably done a lot of thinking about this before just like another Hollywood marriage ending. I feel like this one isn't quite as disposable as others.
Right.
And they blamed a lot of it on the distance, being split between L.A. and New York.
Yeah.
Which can be tough. He was based on the Upper West Side or whatever.
I feel like that's something you can compromise with, especially if you're both successful. His father was the president of Chanel. He's an art collector or dealer or something, you can compromise where you want to live. You can compromise, I think, in marriage on anything except having kids, because you can't have a kid. But everything, I think, you can compromise on. She said that she wasn't really into him when she first met him, which I think is a major red flag. And I think she probably got to know him and fell in love with his family, and she married his family instead of him. And I think that's probably the root of it. So it's just a lesson, like, yeah, just wait for the right one. Don't, you know, all of these other things, he's got a lot of money or he's got a great family, or if it's just you two stuck on the moon together, if this is the person you'd want to be stuck with, that's the test.
There you go.
I think.
Yeah, that's smart. It's that simple. All these people who have to go to pre-marriage counseling, all they have to do is ask themselves that.
Yeah, seriously. I think so.
Yes. So let's talk about another... I was going to say another hot mess, because that's just what I thought of. And I'm not saying Drew's a hot mess. I don't know why I said that, but I'm looking at Erica Jane's name.
Oh, our girl.
And I'm just thinking hot mess.
Pretty mess.
Pretty mess. Yes. This new music video is, clips were released on E! At time of recording this podcast, her new song, How Many? And I looked at this clip a couple times, and the whole thing made me dizzy. That was my first reaction from the whole thing. It's messy. It's very, like, what can I say? There's crotch touching. She's in pigtails sucking on lollipops.
It's very, like, Japanese anime. Like, remember the girls who used to, followed around Gwen Stefani? Like, they were, I looked up their name earlier. Harajuku or something girls. It's very, like, yes, the hair and the pigtails, the, like, primary colors. It's very, looks like that to me, and it's very bizarre.
It was. To me, it was very, trying to be childlike, which is weird to me.
Yeah.
When you try to make, and this woman's a grown woman of a certain age, and she looks great. You can't take that away from her, but I don't like when adults try to make themselves resemble children and then touch their crotch.
Right, exactly. And she has this, like, high baby voice, too, to add to it. It's uncomfortable.
It is. Yeah. I was disappointed, to be honest with you. Yeah. And I'm a fan of hers, but to me, I think Pretty Mess, I think Painkiller are fun songs. Uh-huh. This, to me, doesn't seem like a very fun song.
No. I like that phrase, which we see a lot of lately, and I put it, it's odd because that's in my book. There's a character who has a magnet, and the magnet says, to be given today, zero. And I was like, oh, that's weird that maybe it's a sign, because then Rosanna Scotto was on an episode of Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, and I based a minor character on her because I love her and I grew up watching her on the news. So I'm like, all of these, like, Real Housewives signs are coming to me related to my book. Maybe it's a good thing.
Ooh, I hope
so.
Yeah.
I don't know. I hope. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I like that phrase. It makes me laugh. But it was, the way it was executed was weird and uncomfortable.
Yeah, I wasn't about that video. But I have to watch the whole thing in its entirety before I can really, really judge. But I don't know. I don't like when people have to make themselves look like kids. But I also feel like, at what point do you say, you know, I'm kind of too old for this?
Yeah, maybe too old. And also, like, you know, like, married to this successful lawyer. Like,
yeah.
I just feel like, not that she should do whatever she wants and she should be, you know, do whatever makes her happy. But it's like a little, it just feels uncomfortable. It just feels weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not embarrassed for her, but I'm kind of like, because I know she's doing what she loves, and that's her thing, so there's nothing to be embarrassed about, but I just feel like, you know, people could easily say, like, this chick is, insert her age, and then just clown her for days, you know, so, like, why do you want to set yourself up for something like that? It's just very extreme. I mean, I'm sure she can do and say whatever the hell she wants, but I just feel like you could be a little bit more, a tad inch towards more age appropriate than just being so, like,
overt.
I mean, an 18-year-old, like, that's like she's doing, like, Miley stuff.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So, you know,
she doesn't give a
give an F. Well, here's where I can use this transition correctly. From one hot mess to the next, a reformed hot mess, I want to wish a happy birthday to Amanda Bynes. Happy 30th birthday.
Oh, happy birthday. I saw her at a clothing store once in Venice.
Really?
Yeah, and she looked great. And I said to the girl, I was like, is that Amanda Bynes? The girl was working there. And she's like, yeah. And then I go to the store all the time. The next time I went in, I was like, what was she like? And she said, really nice and lucid and fine. Because she was, at one time, Oh, the furthest thing from fine and lucid.
I lived to the days that she slept on the Beverly Center couches. But no, I mean, I'm so happy that she's back to life.
Yes.
But when you saw her in that store, I always feel like she's still, like, puffy and the lips are a mess. What did the lips look like in person? She did go kind of extreme at one point.
They look normal. To the point where I was like, I had to ask. I was like, is that...
Okay, yeah. So she probably had a lot of fillers removed, maybe as much as she could taken out.
Yeah, she did have, I think she had extensions or something. Mm-hmm. Like, her hair was a little weird, but she looked good.
She was so cute when she was young.
Yes, adorable.
So it was a shame to see her go so far to the left, but now she's more to center again. So I'm happy about that. But yes, happy birthday, Amanda. Aww. I can relate to her. I'm with watching, like, her doing all the crazy characters on Nickelodeon, because that's kind of what inspired me to do a bunch of crazy stuff as a kid. So I'm a fan of hers, what can I say?
She's your inspiration.
Yeah, a little bit. I don't want to say completely. I don't drink and drive. But let's talk about The Real Housewives of New Jersey, where Fern and I met.
Yes.
So the upcoming season is on its way. There are no premiere dates announced because they just wrapped production on Friday. Mm-hmm. So Friday the 1st. Doesn't look like it's going to...
Yeah.
It doesn't look like much is really going to happen until maybe the end of the show. However, it looks very manufactured and pushed. Jacqueline Larita has been on Twitter sounding off, which I love. I love that, because you're not going to see someone like Teresa go on there and do anything else than promote her book.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. Like, she's not going to do it.
Right.
But Jacqueline will go on there and, like you said, zero Fs, throw shade, and let people know little tidbits. So she was pretty active on Twitter, like, announcing and denouncing certain articles, and just, there's a lot going on. It seems like she's completely against Melissa at this point.
Which is so strange, because they were at the Manzo wedding, they've always, you know, they were on, she was on Carolyn and Melissa's side against Teresa for so long, and now Teresa's at odds.
Oh, Caroline,
with, yes,
yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. Now Caroline's, still at odds with Teresa, wants, you know, nothing to do with her, as she said on Watch What Happens Live. So I thought, like, you know, Jacqueline was, you know, had Melissa roped into that whole group.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, what could they possibly be fighting about?
Well, Jacqueline, in this quote, it says, Jacqueline will not show support for Melissa. She believes that Melissa is self-obsessed and is annoyed that she didn't reach out and support her husband, Chris, when he launched his popcorn line.
I read that. I'm like, he's got a popcorn line now?
It says that she will refuse to attend, which is, they're referring to her fashion show for Envy, which they were supposed to be the finale. They've had three failed finales so far. What can I say? They were supposed to have a finale on the 30th for the fashion show. Then one of the housewives, Dolores, was supposed to have a housewarming party. That failed. Then Teresa was supposed to have an announcement party that she was a New York Times bestseller. That failed as a finale. And then Dolores had a gym opening event that Jacqueline was too ill to attend. So they can't get everyone under the same roof.
So, what qualifies as, like, how do they know when they shoot it that this is the finale? Like, there's some drama, but everybody's there?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think it's like they just want to get everyone in the same space. Yeah. So that way they can do the, like, they, you know, like, I always flash back to the end of summer party on Orange County where they have the text cup next to them. Like, Alexis right. is still worshiping Jesus. Quote, and her, and her husband. You know, like, that type of stuff. So, like, that's what they need.
Yes.
I guess they need everyone in the same room, but Jacqueline is not having it. She says, she sent out a tweet, and we know that Teresa isn't the smartest housewife on the map,
mm-mm.
but she says, someone please tell at Teresa Giudice that it is never okay to use the R word, hashtag Real Housewives of New Jersey.
Oh my god.
So I can only hope that Teresa is not referring to Jacqueline's son.
Oh my god, that's exactly what I thought. I hope not. She better not be.
I mean, how ignorant. Oh. I mean, at this point, Teresa,
right.
you've had to have some type of coaching. You've had to have, you know, be in the world of media and Bravo and just a new echelon of people,
right.
I would hope, to be able to pick up on cues like that.
Right.
At least correctly speaking, ingredients. The woman with the cookbook.
The vest.
The woman with the cookbook.
I thought they were done season one when he insulted the dance teacher. I was like, these people are going to see these people as just like the animals that they are.
Yes.
And then people love them and they're, how many seasons later?
The Chorizo Army is real. Then Jacqueline goes on, very busy on Twitter. She goes on to say, funny how people that have so much to say about me have no courage to face me one-on-one. Cowards need an army. Hashtag stay tuned.
Oh,
hashtag Real Housewives of New Jersey. So I was completely done with the Real Housewives of New Jersey. I have been severely disappointed by the entire franchise for the last three seasons and pretty much had called it a wrap entirely. However, seeing Jacqueline show out and seeing that there is some type of a feud rooted in something that I don't quite know all about,
right.
I'm interested. So I think I'm going to, you know,
right.
tiptoe back over there. I'm curious.
Oh, good, good.
But I mean, even these articles, they say that they're trying to piece the show back together.
Right.
It's just been in such terrible
shape.
Like,
it sounds like Teresa's doing nothing to risk her probation, doing nothing. She's just collecting a check. And then the rest of them, they just have to manufacture something.
Yeah. Now, Siggy Flicker is supposed to join the show. I am not a fan of this girl.
I don't care
for her. She is a media personality, and she wrote a book, and she has on Wendy Williams quite a bit. And she's, like, the most annoying one on there, and I don't mean that in a mean way. I just mean, like, she, like, shouts everyone else's conversations, and, like, she, like, shouts about things. But it seems like she's going to be an ally of Jacqueline's.
And she's a full-time housewife?
Allegedly. Yeah.
Oh, because I know that Dolores, but, interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she could just be a friend, because there's always conflicting reports with who's really, in this show, putting their hands on their hip and who isn't. So, who knows, but Jacqueline's got me interested.
Oh,
I like
good.
To be able to show out, and,
yeah.
I feel like she's someone that would be pretty honest.
Yes.
You know, more
she
than
She always
like
lets
Teresa.
It out.
Yeah.
She always, yeah.
But the popcorn line, I'm like, now what gimmicks are they doing?
It's crazy.
How do you make money doing all this?
I don't know. The BLK water was such a bad idea. Who would want to drink black water? It has no, like, and it sounded like it wasn't, like, had vitamins in it or, I don't know, seaweed or something that people think is good. It was such a bad idea.
Yeah, no, I've seen it actually in West Hollywood, like, for sale.
So people are buying
and I'm
it?
Like, it's like they put, like, three bottles on a shelf, you know what I mean? It's like, you know, like eight of everything else, then, like, three of that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it must be moving if it's out there, but I don't know. I really don't
Even
know.
Though I think it's a bad idea, I'm glad it's doing well, because I do like her kid. You know, when you see the kids and you see the family, I'm like, oh, I want them to be all right.
Yeah, and she's supposed to have a bunch of money problems, so maybe they can need all the help they can get. Also, Jacqueline, continuing to throw shade, was posting some little images on or commentary on Easter about Kathy Wakili's cooking. Now, I'm not a Kathy fan, but I like shade, so what can I say? She, and I believe this is super shady, she said, quote, "Nobody cooks or bakes more or better than at Kathy Wakili. Nobody."
That means you, Teresa.
There's really no, like, gray space in there, really. I mean, you're pretty much drawing a line.
Uh-huh. Wow, so I guess it's Melissa and Teresa finally together on one side, which is nice to see, versus Loretta Manzo, even though not on it, but
Yeah. Unless if Teresa just acts like a dead fish, and while everyone's upset with her, she just kind of sits there and looks at them.
Yeah.
You know, that could be possibly, but there's got to be some type of catalyst there.
Yeah.
Of course, we know Jacqueline and Teresa have been at odds for a while, so I'm hoping that there's maybe a little bit more to the story at this point, because that's very old news. You know. That conversation
Seriously.
On the deck that happens in that
Seriously.
Hot summer night, like, it seems like 9 years ago. Oh, well, let's talk about an evergreen story. O.J. Simpson. What can you do with this man?
Oh, my God.
Now Martin Sheen is coming out with a 6-part documentary after an 18-year investigation proving evidence, or looking for proof, I mean, something along those lines to be able to show the innocence of O.J. At this point, who the hell continues to think that O.J. is innocent?
Honestly, it's ridiculous. I was like, I Googled, who does Martin Sheen think actually killed Nicole Brown Simpson? And it's based on this, and I've heard this guy in a couple of podcasts, I think his name's William C. Deer, he's written a couple books, saying that it was Jason Simpson, O.J.'s son. But there's no way to explain how O.J.'s blood got you know, on the
all over. Yeah.
So, okay, so maybe the first jury thought that it was planted by the police. Okay, so how do you explain that, you know, that it was Jason? I just don't get it. I just think it's silly. I read Jeffrey Toobin's book. I've listened to him on podcasts. He's like, please, internet, stop saying that it was not OJ because, and stop saying it was Jason because it's just so obvious.
It's too obvious. Yes. It's too obvious. And that's what's so frustrating with watching The People versus OJ on FX, because it's just like you're rooting for, you know, Marsha Clark so much.
And I'm like, so glad that she finally got her, you know, people finally saw her in a different light and understood her and felt for her. Like, it's so nice to see, you know, see all of them, what they've, from each of their perspectives, and to really understand what they went through.
Yeah. She's on like this little redemption tour. She's been on a lot of shows. She was on The View. They didn't give her too much of an opportunity to speak of anything, only for Joy to make a very tasteless joke about Judge Ito. So a lot of time wasted over there. Marsha, I could have told you, skip that show. Yeah. Don't bother. Go on Kelly and Michael if you're in New York. Yeah. You know what I mean? Or go on, go on like Good Day New York or something. I mean, like, anything is better than that mess. So, yeah, this documentary is going to air on the ID channel. And according to Inside Edition, it's going to air next year. So, I'm like, I don't know who's going to... I mean, people will still be checking for OJ.
People will always be interested. Because he still is, as Jeffrey Toobin said, the most famous person to ever be accused of murder in America. So that's why, you know, they haven't had a story like that in 20 years. So it's... It'll probably still be, people will still be obsessed with it for a long time to come. I know I am. I have a couple morbid obsessions like the JFK assassination and the O.J. Simpson case. I can't help myself. And I thought the Ryan Murphy series was done so well. I'm looking forward to the ESPN documentary, but I'm not looking forward to Martin Sheen's
docu.
He thinks it's going to be like the next Jinx, like they're, you know, the police are going to like swoop in and arrest Jason Simpson. It's not going to happen like that.
No,
keep dreaming.
And you know, we have to look at platforms, what they are too. I mean, his documentary is going to be on the ID channel, where this show at FX has such buzz around it, and it's a lot of it is because, not necessarily because it's news making, just because, like you said, like, it's so well done.
Yeah,
and the performances on this show are fantastic. This show has never disappointed me. I look forward to it. I have one episode left as it airs coming up, and I'm just, I'm sad to see it go.
Me too.
It's so well done, it's really, and the pacing. Well done. And I think it's great for Ryan Murphy because he's beholden to an actual real story. He can't be doing outlandish things and having people walk in from, you know, we thought we're dead. Like, you know, Nicole wasn't going to walk across the room. So, I'm like, you know, it's really well done and well put together. I can't wait to see what he does next.
Yeah, me too. I hope he does Amanda Knox next or JonBenet Ramsey. Those are, those would be interesting. Because those are, like the OJ case, you know what happened. You read what you read in the news. But you want someone to interpret what happened behind the scenes, even if we'll never know for sure. Right. You just want to know what was happening in the Bronco, essentially.
Yeah, and all these things behind closed doors, like all the politics, you know?
Yes.
So interesting. I'd be interested in seeing them cover the Michael Jackson trials.
Oh, yes. That was another one.
Yeah. And Anna Nicole Smith, because I lived for that case. I don't think there's quite enough for 10 episodes with that, but there were a lot of twists and turns.
There were. Oh, my God.
So that one, that was like my OJ, because that was like kind of age where I could understand all this.
Yes.
And Anna Nicole was just so outrageous in her own way.
It was ridiculous.
And Howard Stern getting involved.
There are so many elements to that, with the first her son dying, which was so sad, and then her, and then the paternity issue. That one is ripe for the next season.
Love to see how they depict the time periods, because you know, we're not really going back too far, but it's far enough where there's a certain style and flair, and it's so fascinating to see come together. I've been trying not to talk about politics on the show because who could be bothered at this point? It's everywhere. It's I don't want to get involved because there's just too much other good stuff, and it's like oversaturated. However, Ivana Trump, what can we say about her? She gave an interview to the New York Post recently, very recently, in fact, and she kind of's backing up her ex. She seems to be on Team Trump.
I think she'll be a great president.
Yep. She went on to say a bunch of stuff, that 5 years before their divorce, the Republican Party reached out to him to potentially run, allegedly, and all this. So this has been a long time coming, she says, and some like odd things that she said along the way. She did clarify that Donald has no trouble downstairs. I'm so glad they can put that to rest.
Oh, thank God. It's what we worry about in our presidential candidates. Disgusting.
I can only imagine what the world must think. And she continues to say, she talks about immigration pretty much, and she feels kind of the same way that other people do in Team Donald. And she says that...
I have the quote. It says, as long as you come here legally and get a proper job, we need immigrants. Who's going to vacuum our living rooms and clean up after us? Americans don't like to do that. Oh, my God. How do they say these things and not know that it's offensive, one, but that it's going to blow up?
Yes.
So this is in the so Post. It's now color. People. Yeah,
it's so off color, and it's more than anything, it paints Mexican people and immigrants and minorities with a brush that's all they're good for and that's all they're recognized for. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, across top universities, there are folks from different religions, mm-hmm. races, creeds, and you go around the country. There are plenty of white people I see who are in circumstances or made positions, right. Cleaning hotel rooms, right. Working in that line of mm-hmm. hospitality. So it's very unfair to paint a group of people with that brush. Mm-hmm. And I just don't know how anyone nowadays in this day and age would feel comfortable speaking out to a major press outlet saying those words and being like, yeah. And not eating the words or like painting, trying to be like, oh, but I really kind of mean this.
Right, like Kelly Osbourne. The minute it came out of Kelly Osbourne's mouth on The View, she was horrified. She was, immediately backpacking. She was crying during the commercial break. But it seems like Ivana is so obtuse that she's just like says it and then goes on her merry way. Yep. Get her hair and nails done.
Yeah, just like Donald. It's that 1% group mm-hmm. that Donald claims that he is, not aligned with, right. but yet that's where he's come. That's where he comes from. Right. That's where his kids are. That's just the world that he lives in. He has a building in New York with its own zip code. Come on, I can't relate to that.
Right. So but I remember him going bankrupt, and I remember him telling his daughter a story where they. Stepped out of the car and there was a homeless person on the street. He was $800 million in debt. And he said to his daughter, that homeless person sleeping on the street is $800 million richer than me. So he has been down before. And okay, so maybe it was his smarts that got him out of it. Who knows what it was. But he's been down before and they should recognize that. Yeah, you might have a wonderful, she might get wonderful monthly payments from him, but mm-hmm. they could stop it. Life is crazy and there are so many twists and turns and who knows what could happen. She could end up having to clean her own, clean her living room, vacuum her living room herself one day. So you shouldn't say stuff like this.
Yeah, it's just not right. It's so out of touch.
It's so out of touch. She's so just in her like gilded fancy apartment. Mile high above New York City and has no clue.
I usually like fancy people. Like, I love Tori Spelling's mother. I just feel like she, lives the high life. Joan Rivers,
Right.
But those people aren't celebrating ignorance, and they're not being too flashy and in your face with it. And Candy Spelling could be. And she, that big house she had, someone could argue it was. But I feel like she's not obnoxious with it.
Right.
Personally. Right. In fact, whenever you look at anything that Candy Spelling has out there, it's usually she's complaining about her daughter, right. That's kind of about it.
Right.
I don't really see her, making comments like this. It's just very unnecessary.
About a whole culture.
Yeah.
I
mean, the overall thing I think, and this is what I'll say about everything under the umbrella of immigration and racism and all the stuff that we face is I think a lot of people outside of big cities don't have the interaction mm-hmm. or the relationships mm-hmm. with these folks. Mm-hmm. So to them, it's just like an us versus them thing because they don't have the acknowledgement. They don't have the interaction of these people.
Right.
So it's an easy thing to paint someone with a brush. But if,
Yeah.
Now the world is becoming mixed, folks. Mm-hmm. So
deal with it.
Yeah.
But you're right. If they never worked with, you know, so when I was a lawyer and accountant, worked with a brilliant young Mexican coworker, then mm-hmm. you can never say, you know, like, look at this person who had a similar track as me, and you know that you when you mm-hmm. it takes getting to know people to erase that ignorance, and yes. these people don't see that. Mm-hmm. They don't. Yeah,
and that goes back to what I was saying about them being in that 1% bubble, where it's like they're like looking over like a building down at everybody yes. else. So it's like, well, how are you going to be a worldly person mm-hmm. and be accepting of anything when you only know a small fraction right. of the world?
Right.
And that's my thoughts.
I'm sorry, I keep talking about my book, but there's a line in my book that I wrote when I wrote a blog post about being in an interfaith marriage, and it's that there are no labels, only souls. So in the true state of things, you're not Mexican, you're not Jewish, you're not Italian, you're not anything. That's not who you really are. You are only your soul. And so there are good, hardworking, wonderful, pure souls in every under every label. Yeah. And that, you know, that's just a fact. That's the true state of things.
It's true. Good people, bad people come in all mm-hmm. shapes and colors. And you mm-hmm. you never know who's coming at you. Mm-hmm. You know? So it's like, yeah. I hate anyone that paints anyone with a brush because it's just so close-minded mm-hmm. and we just can't be like that anymore.
It's so wrong. It's just wrong.
Yep.
Yeah.
You're listening to Grant's Rants. Please rate, subscribe, and share on iTunes and social media. Spread the word. There are a lot more rants to come. Follow us on Twitter at Grants_Rants. And now for the one-on-one.
The book is called Better in the Morning, and it's coming out April 26th. So definitely check that out. We're sitting with author Fern Roné.
Hi.
Let's talk about this book and the inspiration behind it.
Yeah, okay. People keep asking me if it's based on me. It is somewhat based on me, but the things that happened to her did not happen to me, thank God. It's fiction, so it has mm-hmm. to actually be interesting. So it is somewhat based on me and somewhat based on my journey, but not entirely. And the character of the boyfriend who, you know, she thinks she's going to get engaged in the first couple chapters, that's not based on anyone either. Mm-hmm. I met my husband at 31, going on 32, so I dated a lot of people before that, so... Mm-hmm. I have a lot of, you know, experience, so it's not based on one person. The character of Sid is somewhat based on my husband, but again, you know, it's mm-hmm. fiction. So it is my story, and it is my love story, and my, you know, realization story about what I'm meant to do here. But it's not my biography by any means.
Right, right.
Yeah.
That's good. So how long have you been writing this?
So I took a class in 2008. Oh my God, it seems so long ago. In New York, when I was still living in New York. And I finally finished it in 2012. So I had been writing it on and off and exchanging with beta readers and taking more classes and just trying to make it better. Mm-hmm. And then in 2012, I felt ready to send it to literary agents. So I started sending it to literary agents in 2013.
So when this finally comes out on the 26th, it's going to be like giving birth to a very long project.
I know. It's my book birthday. I can't wait. Yes. Yes, my baby will finally be here.
So what was the turning point? You know, we mentioned you're a former lawyer.
Yeah.
What was the turning point to get into writing novels? Yeah.
So I was a lawyer, and then I was at Deloitte. I returned to Deloitte to do consulting. And I was 30, and I was dreading turning 30. My 30th birthday I was single. I'm like, I'm a single lawyer in New York City. This is so pathetic. Like, when am I going to meet my husband? It was so depressing. And then 6 weeks before my 30th birthday, my 21-year-old cousin died. And that was a bit of a turning point, but I still, you know, I still kept on the track of just doing the finance and law thing, working in the World Financial Center at Deloitte in downtown New York. And then just over, you know, the course of time, and one time in particular, just working a million hours in a windowless conference room. And I thought, I can't do this for another 30 years. Like, I'm so, not to quote Lisa Rinna, but I totally related when she said, I'm so much more fabulous than this. Yeah. I had felt that for a long time. And I had always felt that I wasn't a creative person. And then I got to the point where I was like, maybe I am. I'm not interested in what we're doing here. This isn't interesting to me. I don't want to read financial statements. And I would look around the room and think, do these people really care? Like, they really think this is interesting? Yes, I don't care at all. And I think that's a sign that you probably are not in the right job.
Yeah.
What I cared about was I wanted to go around the room and be like, when did you meet your spouse? How many kids do you have? Who of your kids are you the most worried about? Like, those things, like life stories, that's what I care about.
Yeah.
So I started working with a career coach, and I realized that just because I can do all the hard things, and I had such a high tolerance for boring material in my 20s and in college, I was an accounting major, and, you know, I took and passed the bar and all of everything, just because I could do it, and I really could do it, I would be like, give me the most dry, most boring, I could do it. Like, I could pass the bar the first time. I could do anything.
Oh, God bless you. I couldn't wrap my mind around all that because it is so dry. Like, I can't read. Like, you know, when they give you anything, if you go to, like, rent a car, there's some stuff you have to read, to sign. I couldn't be bothered. I skim it because I feel, like, obligated. But, I mean, am I internalizing any of that? Is that registering? No. I can't sit through
it. It's painful. I used to have a very high tolerance for boring material, and then certain life events happened, like I think my cousin passing was a huge event, a huge turning point internally for me, even if I didn't process it that way immediately, just made you realize life is short, and that happiness to me isn't things, and happiness to me is how I spend my time. There's a certain amount of time I'll be on earth. I don't want to spend it reading financial statements. I want to spend it engaged in something that's really interesting and really fulfilling to me.
Yeah.
So I started working with a career coach, and she made me realize that just because you can do all of these hard things doesn't mean you have to. And you're a lawyer and you can go back to it someday, but you have to follow what you're, you know, the pull, what you're feeling pulled toward. And it's not going to happen overnight, and you take baby steps and you take a class and see where it leads.
Yeah.
So that was the turning point. I was like, you know, just because I can do it doesn't mean I have to. It's such a great realization. And just because the people in this room think bankruptcy law is so fascinating, although I think some of them are faking it, it's okay that I don't feel that way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was such a relief.
That's what I was going to ask. When you put all that behind you and you had completely understood where you're going to move on to next, at least that you were going to leave that behind, like, what did that feel like?
It was scary at first because I was like, how am I going to take a class? I work 90 hours a week. Like, how is this possible? And then I just kind of slept on it, and which means more than just that if you read my book. But I slept on it, and I just let it marinate. And then I was in the Hamptons one weekend, and I had been debating whether or not to take a news reporting class because I was like, how am I going to fit this into my schedule? I had been debating whether or not to take it. And in walked Rosanna Scotto. So we were at a restaurant, and Michael Moore was having a party for one of his movies in the back. And she walked in, and she was like, hi, girls. Like, she knew me, my friends. And she kept walking, and someone said, that was Rosanna Scotto. I'm like, that was Rosanna Scotto. And I grew up watching her on the news since I was a kid, and I remember being like, is her name Rosanna Scott? And my parents were like, no, it's Scotto. She's Italian. Like, this Italian girl is on TV. And I just always loved her. And then when she walked in, I was like, this is a sign. Like, I am taking that class. I don't care, like, if it's silly. I don't care if it's, I'm not going to be able to make it to half the classes, although that didn't happen, thank God. I'm doing this. I want to just see what it feels like. And I did. And it was so much fun. And that whole summer, everyone I met, like, you know, it was the summer, so we were out in the Hamptons, we were at the shore, at bars, you know, on happy hour every Thursday night. And I'd be like, I'm going to be the next Rosanna Scotto. And that's what I told Howie when I met him. He was like, really? Okay. Interesting.
That's funny. Yeah. Howie, your husband.
Yes, my husband.
Yes. Oh, another thing about you and that I just find fascinating that is kind of in line with this, with signs and things kind of working their way out, is that your application got lost in the mail to Florida Law School.
Yes,
your application got lost in the mail.
Isn't that crazy?
Now, that would piss anybody off. I mean, the work that goes into stuff like that, to not be able to be considered for something like that. A school that you cut, I'm sure you mentally prepared and picture yourself in this environment.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I was like, I want to stay in New York. Yeah. Fordham is like where I want to go. I remember crying to the woman at the post office. I'm like, are you sure it's not like stuck under like one of the desks? Like, you know, anything can happen. Yeah. I've always had an active imagination. I'm like, can you just look? And she was like, if you want to be a lawyer, you're going to have to mail things. And maybe you should have mailed it certified. I was like, this is not what you should be saying to me right now.
That is the worst thing you could say to someone. I would have ripped that woman's head off.
Right? But now I think about it and I'm like, okay, my application got lost in the mail. I reapplied 2 weeks before the deadline. I didn't get in. I ended up going to Boston College Law School, which was even, you know, ranked even higher, but it was in Boston. I had to go away. And I met my friend Christine, and then years later, Christine was like, come out to this bar for my coworker Steven's birthday. And that was on July 7th, 2007. And there was this cute bald guy at the bar, and I was drunk and feeling happy. And I was like, hi, I'm Jen. So I go by Jen at home.
Yeah.
And we just started talking, and he's my husband now.
There you go.
So thank you, U.S. Postal Service. People don't always connect the dots, but if you do, tweet me because I love these stories.
Yeah. I'm kind of waiting for that little scenario myself. I've had a lot of rejection with certain things. I'm thinking it's part of a bigger picture, but I'm kind of waiting for that to kind of come together.
It is. Really is. So many things that I thought were the worst thing that could happen turned out being the best thing that could happen, including getting rejected from 70 literary agents because it just wasn't the right time. And when I finally moved on to small independent publishers and I found my publisher, it couldn't be a more perfect fit. It's Red Adept Publishing. They operate like a traditional publisher. Because they're small, they give you so much more attention than one of the big six publishers ever would. And because they operate like a traditional publisher, they, you know, you split the royalties. They invest in you, in the editor, in the cover design, and everything. So they've invested in me and have made my dreams come true, and I'm like so grateful that I found them because it couldn't be a more perfect fit. They're so supportive. All of the authors are so supportive of each other. It's amazing.
Before it all worked out in that direction, though, how did you overcome all of the rejection, not knowingness of it all?
It's terrible, but I just looked for the signs.
Yeah.
I just looked for the signs. Even, you know, it's funny, even when I wasn't looking for the signs, they would appear. So you can't look for them.
So like glimmers of hope or...
Yes.
Yeah, the faith.
So my grandfather sends me pennies. My other grandmother is a fly. My other grandmother is a leaf. I could tell you the background of those, but...
I'm kind of curious. Yeah. There must be a story.
There is. But really quickly to answer your question, I just... When I wanted to give up, something would appear and I would be like, maybe this is a sign to keep going. And I had exchange with beta readers because that's part of the process. So you exchange with other writers to read each other's manuscripts. And one writer wrote, I'm enjoying your story immensely. I think you have something rather special on your hands. And it so made me not want to give up. I was like, this is a story I'm meant to tell. Mm-hmm. And I wrote it on a post-it note and I put it in the wall in my bathroom. And I was like, I'm just not going to give up. Even though it was hard at times. Yeah. I was like, I'm not going to give up. And I remember being home. I remember getting rejected by one agent in particular I thought was a perfect fit. And I remember her rejection was so biting. A lot of the rejections, you know, I don't begrudge them. It wasn't the right fit for them. And that's fine. But some of them would write things like, if she's a lawyer, why doesn't she want to be a lawyer anymore? Like, I'm like, you read books all day as an agent. You have the greatest job. Like, it's okay. I took it as, okay, I have to make it more understandable. So I took the constructive criticism, but I also took it as this woman just doesn't get it.
Yeah.
She's just not the right person for my story. And I so thought she was, and it was so disappointing. And I was home at my parents' house and my mother was dyeing my hair. and I was sitting in their kitchen and my father has all these plants all over. And I was thinking, I can't believe she didn't work out. That's so upsetting. And then a leaf fell off one of my father's like trees that it's practically a tree that he has in our kitchen. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, hi, Graham. And then I was like, looking back, I think, oh, she was not the one.
Yeah.
And thank God I found Red Adept. And thank God it didn't get an agent then because it was not the right time. I had to move to LA. I had to do AfterBuzz. I had to meet John Edward. Was such a blessing interviewing psychic medium John Edward. All of these things had to line up before my book could be shown to the world. I had to find the right people. Mm-hmm. So you just have to trust.
Yeah. That faith too.
Yeah.
And you were talking about how you and your husband listen to Joel Osteen.
Love.
And you find such positive affirmation in him. And I do as well. In fact, Megan Stecker, both mutual friend and friend of the show, encouraged me to listen. So
he's so great.
I'll go to like meditation. This is sounds like so woo-woo, but this is what works for me. I'll go to meditation, then instead of listening to like Tyga on the way home, I'll listen to like Joel. So I'll maintain that, you know, that positive energy and that thought process. And I mean, you know, he's got his little promos in there for things.
I know.
And I can only imagine what his wife must look like. I just picture a very,
she's
like,
so blonde and Texas.
But his words are great.
Oh, they're great. Like, I'm Catholic. Howie's Jewish. But we believe in, you know, the church of just be nice. All religions basically say the same thing. And we believe in the law of attraction that will put, you know, you have to watch what you put out there. And believe that it's a friendly universe and you're on the right path and you're, you know, that's exactly what he says.
Yeah.
And if you can just get past the, like, buy the 1999 Jesus kit or whatever he said, he says some things in between that I'm like, okay. But his stories are so good and they are so the law of attraction. Mm-hmm. Even though there's the oldest stories in the Bible, his interpretation is the law of attraction. It's amazing.
Yeah. They're a really good listen. They're only about, 25 mm-hmm. minutes?
Yeah.
So a real quick and easy listen. And it's just positive. It's not even necessarily too rooted in Jesus talk.
At all.
It's just, it's enough to be able to get through. And it's all worth something, that's you great. Know? So, yeah, I love that you listen to him too. I try to add that my life, especially now, a little bit more, because I am really trying to embrace this law of attraction and you know, bring in the right energy.
Yes.
Attracting the right energy. So let's talk about that energy, actually. You say that energy doesn't die. And, you know, it just helps souls, you know, you just evolve with the soul. So talk more about that, because I love this talk.
Yeah, well, I mean, it would be nice if the meaning of life was that, you know, you're supposed to come here and be happy and laugh. But you're supposed to come here and learn all the lessons you're supposed to learn to make your soul evolve. So you were somewhere before you were here, and you'll be somewhere after you leave. And this journey is kind of a forgetfulness, kind of a amnesia, where you are, your soul is going through all of these tests. And once it has learned everything it's supposed to learn, it's ready to pass to the other side. And I think that when we go to sleep at night, that we're able to connect with the other side, because you're not awake, you're not, have your guard up, you're not, you're in on another plane. So I think when we go to sleep at night, we meet with our spirit guides, and the other side is in a physical place. Like, you can be anywhere. Mm-hmm. So you go to sleep at night and you meet with your spirit guides on this other plane, and you, I don't know, everybody talks about something different, but there's a reason that everything is better in the morning. There's a reason why when you wake up, maybe you don't have the answer right away to something you've been trying to work out. It'll come to you during the day, but there's a reason that you wake up with this lighter feeling, I believe. And even if you know, people say, oh, I don't dream of my grandmother. Well, it's not a dream per se. It's really a visit, and it's okay that you don't remember it. You do dream of, you do meet with your grandmother, whoever is guiding you. And you just don't remember it. So that's how I think it works. That's what I believe. Mm-hmm. And I think during the day, they don't have a human body to talk to you with. So they use their energy to make things happen so that certain things appear in your path. So if the sign is a penny and you're worried about something and you're walking down the street and you see a penny, you went in that direction for a reason, and you saw that for a reason.
Yeah. I always joke with my grandmother that when she passes, she better be leaving things. She told me, yeah, I'm going to be doing a lot. You're not going to hear the end of me. She's like, yeah, I'll do whatever I can. So I don't know what the sign will be, but she claims
she'll be involved. Well, my grandma and I agreed on a sign. My grandmother, who the most recent one who passed, my mom's mom, I said, send leaves. And she's like, leaves from a tree? And I was like, yeah. And then sure enough, a leaf dropped just when I needed it.
Wow, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she sent other leaves, yeah.
Oh, along the way, yeah. Now, tell me about your grandfather, the fly.
Yeah, so that's my grandfather. So that's what started it all. And, you know, my mother's very spiritual. My parents are not religious at all. But my mother's very spiritual, and she always loved John Edwards. She always read all of these, read all spiritual books. And she told me when I was 19 or 20, around that time in college, that she believed that our cat was her grandmother. And I remember being like, you believe that? And she's like, well, I don't know. Like, my grandmother and I used to squeeze each other's hands. And in like a certain way. And she said, I was lying in bed reading a book, and Shelby, our cat, was holding, like, I was holding her paw, and she like squeezed it in the same, like, kind of like the same beat. And I squeezed it back, and she squeezed it back. And I used to do that with my grandmother. And so then she opened the book that she was reading, and it said Rose, and that was her grandmother's name. And she's like, I don't know. I was just thinking it could be a sign from her. And it got me thinking, and I was like, wow. So I, unlike my parents, always found comfort in going to church. My brother's the same way. I think it's a very personal thing, but, you know, my parents are not religious, but their kids are, and it's so strange. I'm not super religious, but I go to church on Sundays. It makes me feel better.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And I was in church, and I was praying for specifically for my dad's sister, and my dad's mom passed when I was 15, and I was praying for her, meditating on her, and there was a fly in my face and would not go away, really annoying, and I was like, oh, maybe it's grandma. And
so it's a grandmother.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I was like, maybe that's Grandma for Nicola. And so after that, I was always like, I think my grandmother comes to me as a fly. And then when my niece was born, she was born in February, and we have this on video, my sister-in-law is sitting in the hospital room, and she's like, why is there a fly here in the middle of February? I feel like it's her.
Yeah, how could a fly in a sterile
in a hospital?
Yeah.
In the middle of February. We have it on video.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you just never know.
Yeah, you ask and they'll show you.
Yeah.
And if you decide you want it to be something, they'll do it.
Mm-hmm. I think it's important to open up your third eye, because you do see things like that. You know, that just people who are so dialed in and they choose not to believe in nature. You know, it's like they could be missing out on things. It's just interesting.
Yeah.
You
and
never
if it's,
know.
It's a comfort to some people, then I always say whoever's meant to read my book will be led to it somehow. So if you're open to that kind of thing, I hope my book is a great comfort to people. Mm-hmm. But I also don't want it to diminish, and I'm not diminishing anyone's grief. You know, like, there are some people who I'm sure think, I want my mother here. I don't care if she comes to me as a butterfly. I want her here on earth alive. And I totally get that. So I'm not diminishing that in any way.
Right. Now, the book, where can people find it? How can they get this in their
life? It'll be on Amazon, and Barnes & Noble, and they can buy the Kindle version, or they can buy a hard copy. I think Amazon is usually the way to go. So on release day, there'll be a $2.99 Kindle sale. And then after that, the price goes up. But Amazon.
There you go. And you said Barnes & Noble as well?
Yes, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's great.
And you can buy a hard copy or electronic version.
The date one more time, Fern, for Better in the Morning?
April 26th. And if people want to get a email on release day with a link to Amazon and the special $2.99 release day price, they can sign up for my newsletter, which is on all social media.
Great. All right. Well, we're going to post that contact information in this episode below, so you can check out Fern on social media and you can take advantage of that deal. Definitely check out the book. I got people in my life that want to read it, so it's going to be good. It's time to finally celebrate this book. I'm so glad we got to do this show.
Oh,
I wanted to do this show with you since the very beginning. Well, like I you know. Said, wait for the yes. book. So everything's coming together. Yeah, it must be an exciting time for you, though, really, to be able to promote this and have, you know, so much to show, you know, around
it
to
get the word out. I am so proud of it. After the editing process was brutal, but it was amazing. So I'm so proud of where it is now.
That's great. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming in. Check out Fern, all of her information, and there'll be more rants to come.
This has been Grant's Rants. Follow us on Twitter at Grant's_Rants. Cover art created by Howie Roney. Voiceover by Sir Richard Wentworth. Original theme music composed by Alexander Arnson.